You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day, Tobia here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, worker stories, and social justice issues. This program is produced in Naarm, Melbourne, for 3CR, and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, we recognise that our struggles are connected and stand in staunch solidarity with elders past, present, and emerging. On today's episode, we will hear a comprehensive update on the administration of the CFMEU from rank and file members, which has continued to be a wrecking ball for the union and its democratic processes. The audio is collected from 3CR program Solidarity Breakfast with interviews from rank and file CFMEU members. While the mainstream muckraking reporting repeatedly rely almost exclusively on allegedly anonymous sources, it is important to recenter rank and file voices because they are indeed the members and the members are indeed the union. But first, some union news. Since the 31st of December 2003, asbestos has been a banned substance in Victoria. The ban includes the importation, use, and manufacture of all forms of asbestos, and marked a significant milestone in the effort to protect public health from the risks associated with asbestos exposure. Products that were manufactured after this time should not contain asbestos. However, imported products from certain countries may still contain asbestos due to different regulatory environments. There have been many recent examples of this, from the recent investigation into wind farm elevator brake pads containing asbestos to it being found in children's coloured kinetic sand. Australian unions have recently released a statement that warns that without an urgent overhaul of the laws covering asbestos removal, as many as 27,000 Australians will die from exposure to old and degrading asbestos over the course of the century. More than 6 million tonnes of asbestos material remain in Australia's built environment. At the current slow pace of removal, there will still be asbestos in our homes and workplaces at the end of this century, 100 years after it was banned. The latest Asbestos National Strategic Plan says this will mean a further 27,000 Australians will encounter the toxic material and are expected to die from the deadly exposure in communities Australia-wide in the coming decades. This is all occurring concurrently with one of the most historic legal challenges in Australian history, as the Bunjima traditional owners are taking the Western Australian government to court over the toxic remains of asbestos mining in the abandoned town of Wittenoom, which is the location of one of the most infamous industrial disasters in modern history. Nicknamed Australia's Chernobyl for the utter devastation that remains up to this day, the mine at Wittenoom Gorge, 1,500 kilometres north of Perth, was closed in 1966, but with its 2 decades of operation being linked to well over 1,200 deaths. Seeing as we are on the verge of Asbestos Awareness Week, I will leave you this, a passage from the late Professor Lowington's book, Biology as Ideology. Quoting, "It is undoubtedly true that pollutants and industrial wastes are the immediate physiological causes of cancers, miners' black lung, textile workers' brown lung, and a host of other disorders. Moreover, it is undoubtedly true that there are trace amounts of cancer-causing substances even in the best of our food and water, unpolluted by pesticides and herbicides that make farm workers sick. But to say that pesticides cause the death of farm workers or that cotton fibres cause brown lung in textile workers is to make fetish out of inanimate objects. We must distinguish between agents and causes. Asbestos fibres and pesticides are the agents of disease and disability. But it is illusory to suppose that if we eliminate these particular irritants, that the diseases will go away. For other similar irritants will take their place. So long as efficiency, the maximization of profit from production, or the filling of centrally planned norms of production without reference to the means remain the motivating forces of productive enterprises the world over, so long as people are trapped by economic need or state regulation into production and consumption of certain things, then one pollutant will replace another. Regulatory agencies or central planning departments will calculate cost and benefit ratios where human misery is costed out at a dollar value. asbestos and cotton lint fibers are not the causes of cancer. They are the agents of social causes, of social formations that determine the nature of our productive and consumptive lives. And in the end, it is only through changes in those social forces that we can get to the root of the problems of health. Going now to Italy for our final story, the now world-famous rank-and-file union USB, Unione Sindacale di Base, along with other rank-and-file unions and a whole host of community organizations from the public housing movement to Palestinian community organizations and political parties like Potere al Popolo, have called for the third round of general strikes on the 28th of November. And then, a nationwide protest in Rome called for the following day. Notably, this time, the larger unions like CGIL, CISL and UIL have not joined the call, with the first two unions selecting the 12th and 13th of December respectively for their own general strikes, and the latter not having made any decisions at the date of recording this episode. Here is the translation of the latest communication by the USB, decided at the General Assembly that was held on the 1st of November in Rome, replete with a list of demands being called for at the end. Quoting, "The budget presented by the Meloni government replies to the logic of rearmament and to the choice to channel our country towards an economy of war, while salaries and pensions continue to lose buying power and social inequalities rise, the world of precarity and of underpaid work widens, and there are more and more people that forego medical assistance or who don't see satisfied their right to secure housing. The government clamorously increases the spending for the purchase and production of new weaponry, individuating in the military sector the only solution to the economic crisis. More accurately, the European avenue for the containment of the public deficit, complete with the slashing of social expenditure, is followed precisely with the objective to have hands free in order to invest in arms, the same hypocrisy used to hide the genocide in Palestine and the complicity of the government with the terrorist state of Israel is used to pretend to address the big social matters of the country, with unemployment numbers covering up the increasing poverty rates and of jobs with starvation wages, with slight tweaks of existing legislation just a ruse to pretend to support the middle classes whilst really favouring the richest sections, with the voluntary contributions to banks, more than $100 billion of profits extracted from our countries in the last 3 years are left in the hands of the financial system. In front of a grave process of deindustrialization, the system is only capable of proposing the conversion of a handful of enterprises into weapons manufacturers. The arms industries and its associates are used to exit a crisis in which pours capitalism. In the various theaters of war, behind the words peace and reconstruction, hide the interests of large cement, energy, and infrastructure groups from Italy and the West, like Webuild, Buzzi, Unicem, Cementir, Leonardo, Terna, and Italfer, ready to extract profits from the devastation of war. The reconstruction of Ukraine and Gaza become deals for the few, while the human, social, and environmental costs fall back on the populations flagellated by conflicts. The mobilizations promoted in support of the Palestinian population and the popular resistance movement brought to light the unavailability in all the peninsula of being complicit in the genocide, and with the decisions of the Meloni government that bring us towards a nightmarish future. Defending Palestine today means breaking the pact between Zionism, capitalism, and the far right, and opening a possibility of liberation for workers and all the people of the world. Trump's truce doesn't recognize any right to the Palestinian people and is allowing Israel to proceed and expand the occupation of Palestinian territories. Italy talks of peace after having supplied weapons, after having directly supported the genocide. Even other countries, like Congo and Sudan, are living through dramatic moments, and it becomes fundamental to unite the struggles and build a real intersectionality between all oppressed people, whilst the threat of aggression towards Venezuela increases. All of this demonstrates that imperialist competition always moves from the political, economic, and commercial level into the military one. The Meloni government openly supports the increase in NATO expenditure and the broader program of rearmament in the European Union. It is an active party in this process. The whole Parliament supports the necessity of a shared defence and of a shared European standing army, when really the only defence from war is disarmament. These decisions don't only reflect in economic terms, but are favouring an authoritarian slant as much towards social struggles as towards the world of education, hitting critical and independent information, and attempting to control other powers of the state. A process of transformation is underway by utilising the politics of rearmament, attempting to regiment and militarise an entire society that is suffering a heavy worsening of living conditions. This is why it is necessary to rebel, putting at the centre clear objectives for mobilisation that correspond without ambiguity to the necessity of millions of workers and of the aspirations of peace, disarmament, equality, and social justice that belong to a large part of the country, against the financialization of war and the Maloney government. Break ties with Israel, free Palestine. The 28th of November, let's link arms and stop everything with a general strike. And on the 29th of November, national protest in Rome. No to the financialization of war. Resignation of the Maloney government, complicit in the genocide in Palestine. The breaking of all ties, diplomatic, economic, academic, and military with Israel. We demand the immediate military embargo and the divestment in every company complicit in genocide, occupation, and apartheid. No to NATO rearmament, and no to European rearmament. The spending to go to healthcare and education out of the avenues of the budget, not to the shared European army, and an end to the export of weapons to Ukraine. Against the Valditara reforms and the Didier Legaspari, we demand the liberation of all Palestinian political prisoners held in Israeli jails, beginning with Marwan Barghouti and Ahmad Sadat, and of the detained Palestinian political prisoners held in Italian jails, especially Anan Yaish and Ahmed Salem, under trial for having supported the resistance against Israeli occupation, for the exit of Italy out of NATO, against the imperialist aggression towards Venezuela, ending the genocide in Sudan and the massacres in Congo. 2,000 euros minimum monthly salary, down with arms, up with salaries. Reintroduction of indexed link pay scale, 32 hours in parity of salary over 4 working days, retirement at 62 years of age, nationalization of strategic industrial sectors, naturalization of all migrant workers, abolition of goods and services tax on primary need goods, taxation of bank profits, salary matched rents, and 1 million public housing units. No to the DDL Le Sicurezza, no to the repression of social struggles.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news, and social justice issues.
We go now to our CFMEU report with excerpts from 2 Solidarity Breakfast episodes featuring rank-and-file union members as they speak about their conditions under administration.
We wanted to get an update following the push by the administration to remove up to 15 of the existing 30 organisers. Now, Dusty, you're a delegate, so you went to the most recent delegate meeting after the removal of Steve Long and the threat of removing more organisers. What was the general feel of the meeting?
The meeting was a bit sombre because we'd had a few deaths in our membership. So it sort of led with that. And then there was a bit of a report back on Steve Long. So you would have seen some articles and stuff come out. A lot of innuendo, a lot of speculation and trying to essentially say that Steve Long's done something wrong by having the CFMU donate money to a local community sports club, which every building union and a bunch of corporate sponsors sponsor as well. It's also not the only football club that we sponsor. You know, I believe there's 4 others all the way down to Hastings. So they've tried to tie him as if he's done something wrong in there, and then mention some companies. You know, one's got a ATO tax bill. I don't know how that's got anything to do with the CFMU. I think that the government should chase up their own money. And then one, that's a sponsor to the club, and they were an EBA company, one that we never wanted. I believe they got it through the NBA, not through our office. So that's the Master Builders. issue there that they've given that company an EBO, as far as I'm concerned. Steve Long's been with the union for 50 years, and 20 of those years he's been a union official working for the union.
Amelia, how have other people at your work site and in general been feeling about the attacks in The Age that have not led to any charges, but there's a lot of, as Dusty said, lots of innuendo?
I mean, to be honest, at my workplace, I don't think that any of my colleagues pay much attention to The Age and whatever rubbish they're putting out. For my comrades who are a bit more involved with the union and who attend branch meetings and who have been paying close attention to this administration, we're really concerned because this legislation that put us into administration came out of a big media attack. And we keep seeing waves of mainstream media just coming on to attack our union. So although, like, most of these claims are unsubstantiated and, like, really grasping at straws, really trying to pick at anything that they can, it turns into real consequences with the administration. So, like, when the legislation was passed and we were put under administration, we lost 270 officials in one day. And then as it's progressed, as more media reports come out, the administrator will retaliate and remove more officials. And we're not seeing officials removed for allegations of corruption or wrongdoing. We actually see a lot of officials removed for political reasons, or because they rub the administrator up the wrong way. So one official that was removed last year was Esther. She was removed after having a confrontation with Nick McKenzie in public.
A journalist who's been...
Yes.
Well, if you can call him that.
Well, whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Nick McKenzie just called up the administrator and within 24 hours she was removed. There was no investigation, there's no right of reply, and at the moment we're waiting to have Esther's case heard in the courts. She's challenging this dismissal and this move to put her on the removed persons list. So we're fully behind her and we want her back in her position. We also only a few months ago saw another round of officials being forced out. So not all of these officials are sacked and put on the removed persons list. There are a number of officials who are forced to resign.
Yeah, that's what they say. They say to them, you either resign or you'll lose all your, you know, entitlements and stuff like that.
Exactly. Which doesn't really give them much of a choice. I mean, they're out anyway. People. Yeah, exactly. They've got families to look after. They've got homes to keep over their heads and everything like that. Some of the officials early on who were forced to resign, they were forced to sign NDAs and all that kind of rubbish, and then were put on the removed persons list anyway. And
the removed persons list means they're not allowed to apply for any work in the union, in any union.
Yeah, any union, and they can't represent workers in any capacity. So it's really pretty serious. Like in Queensland, we've seen them lose 50% of their officials, and same with South Australia. And then in New South Wales, they've lost over 70% of their officials. And so now this new round of stripping out people from our union is really concerning because we're losing a lot of experience and a lot of really great people who fight for their members. And yeah, it's kind of like, well, what are we going to be left with? It's just a bit over a year of administration and we've already lost so much.
Dusty, bring you in here. The CFMEU is a membership organisation and it's organised around a top tier. Then you've got your organisers, then you've got your delegates, then you've got your members. And this allows people on the shop floor to be able to report through if there's any issues that need to be dealt with, especially safety, because, of course, construction is a very dangerous industry. What are the fears of removing all that experience by getting rid of another 15 organisers?
Yeah, there's a massive fear of that happening. I mean, just like what you've said, we would lose decades and decades of knowledge and experience, relationships with other unions and, you know, the builders and people that we deal with to ensure that our jobs are safe and our members are looked after, and there's always representation. So to remove, like, any more senior officials, you know, Longy was, you know, very much a senior official with his time with the union. So, yeah, taking those sort of heads out of the game will definitely damage us. And it's those type of relationships that are built up over years and years that keep our jobs safe, you know, that keep delegates and HSRs on the job and making sure that there's representation and that workers get a fair say in what happens on the job and how they're protected, how their safety is managed and things like that. So I think it will be a massive, massive loss and damage to our union and every single member that's out there.
I'd love to hear from both of you about your thoughts about the motives behind completely undermining different CFMEU branches' capacity to organise for their workers.
I think that really these attacks are not going to stop until the builders and the bosses say, okay, we're satisfied. You know, like the CFMEU has a reputation for really being quite staunch in maintaining health and safety conditions and pulling up builders when they're doing the wrong thing.
Or even working in the rain or in that wild wet wind that we had recently.
Exactly. And like our union is constantly pushing for more changes in our industry and improving our industry for the workers. But I think that the bosses and the builders see that as coming as a cost to them. But not only that, I think that the Labor Party have a real interest in seeing the dismantling of the CFMEU. I think that before administration, the CFMEU was building a lot of political power in the Labor Party, and that was a real threat to them.
You're back with Annie and Tobiah, but we're also...
we're joined by more.
Yeah, Amelia, rank and file CFMEU, and Casey from Koori Construction, delegate for CFMEU. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in the Victorian CFMEU.
Yeah, it's been really intense over the last week. We have seen at least 10 people leave our union, most of them being organisers. And one of our best organisers, Joel Shackleton, our Koori organiser. Casey, you probably have more to say about that.
Yeah, I do. It's come a real shock to our community with Joel being stood down. He came into this role 4 years ago. He was the first one, 5 years ago now, he was the first ever Indigenous organiser across the CFMEU. And he's come in, he's made waves, he's really done a great job at bridging the gap, at closing the gap of the work life within the industry and within our community. I know personally, I'm just one of hundreds of stories that could sit for hours and tell all the ways that Joel was there, from a death in the family to being bullied on site to having to deal with racist things said on site. It's just a really big blow and a complete shock still to our community today.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because the administration is being put forward as a clean sweep through the CFMEU and making it a better place and all the rest of it. But that's not really your experience as a member. Would that be fair to say?
That's absolutely fair to say. We, in the community as a whole, we are already all talking amongst ourselves. We don't understand how they could even comprehend that getting rid of Joel would be in the best interest of the Indigenous community and in the construction industry. At the end of the day, Joel has been so understanding coming into the industry. He's worked in it for 10 plus years. He knows that a big issue with dealing with the Indigenous issues within the industry isn't always racism. There's a lot of miseducation. There's a lot of ignorance. There's a lot of educating that needs to be done for the wider community to understand the struggles and the generational trauma that our community has to deal with. A lot of people don't realise. They think, oh, but all that stuff that happened to your community happened years ago. We talk about stolen generation and everything like that. That wasn't a long time ago. Myself, I'm first generation. My father was a part of the stolen generation. He was actually in one of the worst homes ever, Ballarat Boys Home. He grew up in there, and that was only one generation ago. So he's come in and educated so many people. So it's not even just how detrimental to our community it is that he's been let go. It's for the industry too. They had an educated, strong, staunch man that was also understanding and wanted to help bridge the gap and improve that education so that we could all sit at the table together equally.
It's amazing, you know, because in your case too, I guess, I mean, because I know I've heard Amelia say, as a woman working in CFMEU gained conditions has meant that you can run a household in an effective way.
Yes, yes, it has. But it's very hard, which Amelia would 100% know, being in a male-dominated industry. Sometimes it can be a bit difficult. There's those bridges, there's that understanding. There's definitely, and it's so worth it because we've got such good allies and comrades that do want to support us through those times. And the benefits for our family is so worthwhile. I know myself personally, I was the first one in my family to ever own a home, and that was partly due to working in the construction industry and the benefits that we get from that, and that is because of organisers like Joel and the other good ones that the administration have decided, no, they're not good.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au or at your favourite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03-9419-8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Tobia. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.